Shane Farmer is an entrepreneur and educator and the founder of Dark Horse Rowing, an online education platform focused on building better humans through rowing. In 2016, Shane created the Dark Horse Rowing YouTube channel, which has enabled him to grow from helping one client at a time to help a community of thousands of Dark Horse athletes from all over the world. With over 125,000 subscribers and over 10 million video views, Shane has expanded his brand to inspire a whole new audience of people to find the body and health they've been looking for. Please put your hands together and welcome to the podcast, Shane Farmer.
Well, wow, that was such a formal welcome. Thank you.
You're the kind of channel I just love on YouTube, is somebody who has a channel that is so passionate about some specific thing. And in watching your videos, that passion really comes out. You had a video about kind of things that you wish you'd known before you started rowing. And it was just like, it was so motivational. I'm like, okay, I'm going to start rowing now. But before we get into that, I want you to take us back before you even started the YouTube channel and what got you interested in fitness and in specifically in rowing?
Wow. So fitness, for some reason, my entire life, since as far back as I can remember, sports were something that just interested me. And I loved sports. I always was playing sports, anything I could get my hands on. Still remember walking off the playground one day with my dad, holding his hand when I'm 7, looking up at my dad. And I wanted to know his history of being an athlete in sports, and he had no history of being an athlete. He was not a physical guy, and something about the rest of my life just kind of kept revolving around sport. But I was never great at it. Let's make no bones about it. I was not a good athlete. I just loved sports, and so I always rode the pine for kind of whatever I was involved in. And went to school in Minnesota, so I had no exposure to rowing, anything like that. And when I got to college, I played a couple of years of club baseball and then transferred schools to the University of San Diego. And so I became an athlete kind of without a sport. And it was the first time in my life where I hadn't had anything in front of me. And the guy across the hall from me had been recruited to row, and he looked me up and down and said, "Hey, you're 6'3", you should think about giving rowing a try." And the rest is history. I stepped foot into kind of an educational seminar about what rowing was. I figured, why not give it a try? Oh, you have to wake up at 5 a.m. Okay, I guess I can stomach that in college. And I just fell in love with it. It was something about the sport grabbed me immediately. And I don't know why, but it did. It was the first thing that came naturally to me, I guess. And then just had this amazing 4-year run. We were at a really small school. Our team were really like ragtag. We were all dark horses. Like, nobody expected us to do anything. Our school had no past history of good rowing. And 12 of us just kind of bonded together, stuck together for 4 years. And we ended up going to the national championships our senior year. So it was like just this really wonderful experience that I had. So I think through that, I fell in love with it and then wanted to kind of share that.
At that time, that was on water rowing?
Correct. Yeah, that was real rowing. That was getting in boats, getting in boats, putting oars in the water, all of that. Yeah.
What are your thoughts about people calling it real rowing versus not real fake rowing? What are the alternatives? Yeah.
It's indoor rowing, I guess, is kind of, you know, then that's really where I've niched into, is I teach indoor rowing for the fitness community. So I don't even teach indoor rowing to rowers. And that's just kind of how I piece it out in my brain. It's all rowing at the end of the day. You know, it all fall under the umbrella of rowing, but you've got on water rowing, you have coastal rowing, you have indoor rowing. So there are just different facets of it.
Is there drama in between the two? Like, do they like, I never indoor row.
Absolutely. I actually just got done emceeing the indoor rowing world championships about a month ago. It was virtual for the first time this year, which was interesting. And there is definitely, I don't know if animosity is the right word, but there's some of the headbutting that happens between the indoor rowing community and the rowing community, because indoor rowing, you don't have to look perfect. You don't have to create perfect rowing to still be decent on the machine. You could be incredibly fit. You could be 6'7" and come from basketball and you have a really great aerobic capacity and you just luck into being really good on the machine, but your technique does not look like rowing on the water technique. And so on water rowers will see that and be frustrated that, you know, somebody without good technique could beat them. And so there's some of that.
What are some of the differences between on water rowing and machine rowing as far as the movement patterns and physicality of it?
The way that I've always explained it is that rowing on a machine is like learning to ride a four-wheeler. Like, it has a seat, it has pedals, you have handlebars, brakes. You get the idea of how the system works. And so you can sit on it comfortably. It's very simple. You're not risking tipping over or anything like that. And then going to learn to row on water is like taking the skill that you learned on a four-wheeler and shifting to a unicycle. Oh. You have the same components involved, but it becomes exponentially more complicated.
And on water, you're usually with more people at rowing at the same time.
You can go anywhere from a single up to eight. And so you go in one, two, four, or eight. And then there are different types of rowing, sweep and sculling. It depends on right. whether you have one big oar or two small oars. Yeah.
Are you looking forward to the Olympics this year?
I'm fingers crossed. Hoping I get to see it. Yeah.
Is there a way of recreating that multiple people in an indoor rowing, or is it always a single rower?
There are ways of doing it. It's very space cumbersome, so it's not done very often, but you use a thing called sliders. And they're essentially floating tracks. It's just a metal frame with a floating track on it. And you can put the nose of one machine on one track and the tail of that machine on a different track. And then you can put a second machine behind you that matches up to the track of the machine in front of it. And then you have eight people and you have to all make it move together. And it'll throw you off if you're not doing it right. So, yeah.
So you've gone from competitive rowing in school, national mm-hmm. championships on the last year, you said.
Yeah.
How do you go from that and transition into, I guess, opening up a business? And tell us a little bit about the origin story of Dark Horse Rowing.
So post college, when I was in college, our strength and conditioning program at the University of San Diego was CrossFit. Our head strength coach brought CrossFit to our school. So we all became CrossFitters without knowing it. And this is 2005, before CrossFit was really cool. Or I should say 2006. So we were doing this thing that was brand new to the world. And we gave it a lot of credit for how we became successful when we were rowing. So post college, I didn't really have much of a future in being a competitive rower. And the only place you can really go is into the elite level. So you're trying to make it to the Olympics or World Championships. I wasn't big enough. I didn't have the scores. So I didn't see a future there. So I switched over to CrossFit and started competing in CrossFit. I ended up going to the CrossFit Games four times.
Oh,
and wow. In that process, started coaching because CrossFit was using so much rowing. So I saw the rowing machine everywhere and nobody knew how to use it and nobody was teaching it. And I had this knowledge of how to do it. And now I understood CrossFit. So my first job out of college was selling life insurance. Hated that. And so after 9 months, I quit with no plan, but I happened to be a member at this CrossFit gym, asked if I could start coaching for them, which I did, then started putting on my own seminars, then got contacted by the company that makes the rowing machine that's probably most prolific in the industry. They'd heard about the seminars. They asked if I would become their head coach. So I took that position, started doing their seminars around the world. And then through that process, started to meet more people and realized that there was room for this information, and really started to take things online in 2015 was when I started Dark Horse. And it was just because I could only teach somebody that was in front of me, and I wanted to have a bigger impact. And there was nothing out there. Nobody had figured out how to teach rowing, which is just inherently very physical and kinesthetic, and nobody had taught without hands-on. And so I really wanted to crack that nut, and that's the origin of Dark Horse. It was me figuring out, how can I teach this incredibly complex, not natural movement to somebody who doesn't care about rowing? They might just own a rowing machine. They don't need to love rowing. I'm not trying to convince them to love the sport. I just want to help them be fit. And so how do I dose that in small bits and do it without ever seeing the person face to face?
Did it start out as wanting to do both people who are using it to exercise and also training coaches, or did that kind of come a little bit later?
Dark Horse started more with the B2C side. I was attempting to reach the end user first while still teaching these seminars traveling. And so that was for the B2B side, if you will, teaching trainers, more of the professional education. We found out in 2016 that we were going to have our first child. And when that happened, we found out we were pregnant, and I realized I didn't want to be traveling anymore to make money, make a living. And so I contacted the company and said, hey, now that I've been online teaching people, I have a decent understanding of how the online course world works and how to teach people without being there. If I could take this course, put it in video format, and run it that way, would you guys be okay with that? And they said, yeah, gave me the green light. And so I built that out. So in 2017, July is when I took that seminar online, and I haven't been traveling since.
That's the concept two rower, right? That's the kind of that's the main rower everybody seems to use. That's the one that's at my gym. That's the one that I use when I'm rowing. Do you think that most people start rowing as just one component to their whole exercise program? Or do you think that there's more and more people who are just like focused on rowing?
It starts as a drip. They see it in the corner of the machine collecting dust. Maybe they hear that it's a great machine. They read an article on Men's Journal or something, and it says rowing is the full body exercise. And so you give it this try, and then inherently it frustrates you the first time because you kind of put energy in, but you don't get the same energy out, and it doesn't quite make sense. And then
you really do need somebody to explain it to you, don't you?
100%.
Yeah.
It is not a natural movement. And I can say this with certainty all the people that I've coached, I've never seen a single person sit down and do it right without some kind of education.
It probably looks funny to see somebody who doesn't have some sort of training on that. Yeah. Because it's exactly. Describe for anybody who's listening to this who doesn't even know what a rowing machine is and how that actually works. Can you just describe that?
Yeah. So a rowing machine is essentially the benefits are that it kind of removes gravity, a lot of gravity from the situation, right? Normally, if we want to exercise, we think about going for a run or going for a bike ride. A rowing machine is a flywheel-based machine. So there's a spinning wheel on the Concept 2. It's vertical versus horizontal, which it is on other machines. You can break it down to think about it in basic bike parts. There's a flywheel, or imagine a bike wheel, attached to a chain and a sprocket. And then there's a handle. That handle moves the flywheel. The flywheel creates resistance through air, and you create this repetitive back and forth motion that becomes meditative and can help you find both strength and endurance and and kind of any aerobic area that you need to hit.
It's a lot of fun too. I think it's fun being on the rower. It is, like you say, you can kind of just get into that groove of rowing. And after watching your videos, it's like, you know, I want to start incorporating this more into my workouts because I do enjoy it a lot.
The slow drip. Just a little bit at a time.
What do the rowing people think of the Peloton people?
There's a decent amount. Some people, I don't think people who own rowing machines look down on people who have Pelotons. Maybe people who have Pelotons look down on people, the lowly people who only have rowing machines.
Is that true, Chad?
It's okay. You can be honest with me.
You getting a lot of use out of that Peloton?
Do you know how much it costs? It's so awesome.
Do you have it in front of just a picture window that looks out onto a forest?
I actually moved it to the front, so therefore when people walk past the house, they get to see that I have a Peloton. I'm never on it, but I bring it all up, I guess, more so to wrap it around to what the question would be. Do you actually think that the success of Peloton has helped fuel the interest in like people turning their entire fitness regime onto like one aspect or one like very kind of easily digestible, all I need to do is this, and I got the screen and I get that, I get the connected part, but it was almost just kind of like, hey, here's everything that you need to do just in kind of like one machine. They did a very good job of doing that. So I'm wondering if everybody kind of followed that lead. And it's like, great, that really gives a space for rowing to now have legitimacy to just like go buy a rowing machine. And this can be your full-time exercise machine.
Yeah, it absolutely did, because it primed the world to kind of accept video coaching, the ability to see something on a monitor and take that as your fitness and not need to step foot into a gym. What specifically in the rowing world, what we've seen is that it inspired the connected rowing machine. So we've had a lot of new entries into the indoor rowing space with companies that now have $2,200 machines that have a big tablet on them, that come with an integrated operating system, that some are trying to create beautiful data visualization, others are an on-water rowing experience. So it's created a lot more breadth in our industry. And so you're seeing more entries, which creates more interest, which creates more capital infusion. Therefore, you see more marketing behind it. And so it definitely has helped with that. I also think that on just raising the awareness of rowing side, CrossFit, I have to give CrossFit a lot of credit, because they almost saved the rowing machine, because it was really only being used in rowing clubs. And then when CrossFit adopted it with just the explosion of CrossFit, people started to see those concept twos everywhere more and more and more. And so it gave a lot of us opportunities to start talking about these things. So it really helped the world as well. And then Peloton came in and kind of modernized us and let people accept that they could have some kind of connected rowing experience, and then encouraged other people to create new equipment behind it.
I think CrossFit is responsible for bringing a lot of people into fitness in general, because it uses just so many different disciplines. CrossFit has its own bit of controversy, doesn't it? I mean, you see like in the bodybuilding community and people using free weights, they're like, ugh, CrossFit, yeah. No, bad. What's the deal with that?
Well, that's any news is good news. And right. So you can say both good and bad. And CrossFit has always been inherently controversial. The CEO for the longest time, I mean, he loved rubbing people the wrong way.
Yeah. And he just had to step down recently too, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And for good reason, he should have stepped down. But his stubbornness, his desire to try to break up kind of the entrenched fitness world, which prior to CrossFit was, you know, in the hands of groups like NASM and ACE, these professional bodies who controlled what fitness was allowed to be.
A lot of bro culture.
Yeah, yes. And he came in like a bull in a china shop and had a lot of science behind what he did, liked to rub people the wrong way. And, you know, so it was kind of like this WWE almost, like, bring, you know, yeah, wrestling, where he could just try to rough, you know, rile people up. And so it created a lot of awareness, good or bad, and people were drawn to it. And obviously, that, you know, it's a shirtless culture, so you have a lot of skin, which doesn't hurt either. So, you know, it kind of naturally marketed it.
Oh yeah, brought in the CrossFit Games, made it, it's a whole thing, you know. So it's, I think it did a lot, and it encourages people just to try things. They see people, you know, jumping off boxes and swinging kettlebells, and it all looks just so doable at any level. You don't have to take it to those extremes to just get into fitness in general. What do you think is the main draw of the rowing machine? Do you see people getting into that for mostly, I want to tone myself, I want to get in better shape, or I want to lose weight? Is there any common denominator?
You see it as a big tool for weight loss. You see it as a tool for recovering from injury, or athletes who can no longer do their sport. They want to come to it because they know they can get great benefit from it without a high risk of injury.
It's low impact.
Right, exactly. And that they can accomplish a lot with one machine. So it's somebody who may not be interested in a gym membership. Maybe they're scared to go to the gym. Maybe they don't want to step foot in it. Maybe they're taking the first step of their weight loss journey. Maybe they have 200 pounds to lose and they're just not comfortable going there. You see a lot of that that comes to it. And then you have the people who see them in the gym and just go, that looks interesting. And yeah, I don't ever see anyone using it, so I'll give it a try and look up a video or two to see where it falls in. And then they find us.
at my gym right now, they've got the concept too. It's standing upright, and you have to ask for them, you know, because of COVID and all the rules. You have to ask to use it, and then they have to take it outside for you to use it out there because you have to wear a mask.
May I please use the rowing machine?
Yeah, so it's sort of a pain to have to use that.
February 16th, 2016 was the day that you launched your first video on YouTube, or at least the one that is currently the first video, which is available on YouTube. Two-part question. A, have you gone back and watched that video recently? And B, do you remember what you were hoping to accomplish and like kind of where your head was at when you were like recording that video and kind of putting it up on your YouTube channel?
Oh, man. I have not gone back and watched it. I'm not good at going back and rewatching content of mine. I don't know about you guys.
No, I don't like to watch the older things. Anything I recorded last week, I don't want to watch.
I remember I saw Johnny Depp on a show, and he's like, I never watch my movies. And I was like, what a peculiar thing. And then, I stopped watching our content a while ago as well.
I couldn't even place what I would have done it on, but
It was actually warming up. You were with another person who was outside of a gym, and you were going through and doing about a warm up for rowing or something.
Okay.
Either way, you don't need to be specific to the actual video. 2016, you're starting up your YouTube channel. What were you looking to actually accomplish at that time with your YouTube channel?
I just needed a way to portray elements of the movement. And I'd been trying to teach through blog article and pictures at the time because that's what everybody else was doing. And it just wasn't working. Like, there's so much in movement that happens between a snapshot at point A and a snapshot at point B. And so I don't want to say I failed, but I was really struggling to get the message across. And every time I would go to look for a video, I couldn't believe that there were no resources out there. Nobody was making any content about it. And so I just went, all right, well, I guess I will put out some videos and we'll figure this out. And I give a lot of credit to, do you guys know Marie Forleo?
I don't know.
And B-School. So I took B-School back then. Marie Forleo has this online course. She's one of the OGs in the online course world, I imagine. And so I took B-School. My wife bought it for me as a surprise. We had no money at the time, so this was a big investment for us. And so I really jumped into the course, and it led us down the content path, how to build content to get your business up and off the ground, and helped us find the platform that we wanted to use and the right delivery method and choosing a schedule and consistency. And I just happened to choose YouTube because I needed to put video out, and I had no idea how to do it. I didn't have a camera. I didn't have anything. And so that was what I chose, and committed to a video a week with no end in sight, but just committing to a video a week, and said, I'll figure out how to do this. And that was how it started. So that was why.
How long before you kind of realized, like, whoa, hold on, this is different than like my Twitter account or my like another social avenue. There's something more to this, because you're 420 videos deep now.
Like, that's a lot of content.
Yeah, you've been very consistent and in such a niche that, like, tip of the hat for that. I mean, there must have been a point where you were like, okay, this is actually like resonating, and there's more here than just another social platform.
It was a while, maybe 2 years of just grinding. Just in the dirt every day, not seeing results.
10 years.
And yeah, absolutely. But the reason behind starting the channel was never to become a YouTuber.
Right.
The reason behind the channel was to educate the audience that I was working with. And so I was never looking for that breakout moment. I was never trying to create a breakout moment. I was always just trying to create good, consistent content to get everything in my brain and put it onto video. And so it's been a slow grind. I mean, I had just passed 100,000 in December, and I've been at this since 2016. So I've never had a single video pop and just go nuts. It's just evergreen content all the way along. And we're starting, you know, I think it's the amalgamation of things now, and I've really gotten a lot better at thumbnails and titles lately. And it's really that's been a big game changer for me. And so now we're seeing that accelerated growth start to happen. You know, we took 2016 until December to reach 100,000, and now we're at 127,000 already. So, you know, the acceleration is happening.
And I would imagine you got a pretty big boost during COVID too, of people kind of locked up and wanting something to do. Although they probably weren't able to buy rowing machines. I'll bet they were all gone, huh?
Correct. They've all been, you know, on 10-week wait lists this whole time. But you're right. COVID certainly helped a lot. It more so, honestly, helped our ad revenue. Our CPMs just went through the roof.
Yeah, that was
during that time.
It seemed like. Yeah.
So you know, anything people could do at home. I'm sure you guys saw the same thing happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
It just
very much so. And do you also get that bump in January, like early January, for the first couple of weeks? So those people coming
right.
out of New Year's resolutions and starting up. And we had Chris Sharp from Yoga with Adrian, and like that's their like Super Bowl time. Like January 1st is when everybody commits to start doing yoga. So I mean, they go ham on that. They do 30 videos and da da. So do you gear your content towards that? Do you have this this pop and early in the year, people turning to rowing videos?
I probably should, but I don't. I just keep my schedule consistent, and I'm good at big picture stuff. I'm bad at like tactical things. And so I could really benefit from having an ops person in house with me. And I'm actually hiring for that at the moment, because I know that if I had the foresight to think about that, then absolutely I would scale to capitalize on that moment, that time of year, generally the like November sweep through end of January, middle of February. But I just don't think that far ahead right now.
Fair enough. And it's totally, but sometimes it's actually best to just be in the space that you're in. Again, another guest was Aaron Marino, who kind of does the same thing. Doesn't think too far out as far as the content is concerned. So do you have any kind of a content calendar, or do you just like whatever it is grabbing me right now is what I'm going to do?
I will film what's grabbing me right now. But I try to be at least a month and a half out. That has been a big lesson that I've learned over the past couple of years, is really trying to get my editor that I work with to be ahead with me. So if I can get 15 videos in his hopper, then we can make sure that we have all that content sitting in the content library that I can be working on the SEO, chipping away at, making sure that the titles are crafted perfectly and getting everything ready ahead of time. And that I think that has helped a lot. Content calendar wise, idea planning though is typically I'm looking at what's happening in the moment, what seems to be things that are trending in the moment, or like there's a new machine called Whipper. You may have seen some advertising come through for that, but it's a 6-inch by 6-inch by 6-inch box that's attempting to be a rowing machine that you can put in a suitcase and travel with.
I'm skeptical.
Yeah, it's as is everybody. And I funded the Kickstarter campaign because I definitely want to be getting my hands on this to let
so you
people
think
know whether
good.
Or not it's worth it. Well, we'll test it and we'll see.
Yeah.
It's more so because people are going to want to know.
Sure.
And people were looking at it going, there's no way a 6-inch by 6-inch, 6 by 6 by 6 box can give me what a Concept 2 gives me, you know, for $400 and fit in a suitcase. And the machine itself, it's all rails and they just click together. And so it folds into the size of a suitcase. And so we'll see.
That sounds like a real Kickstarter campaign right there.
It 100% is.
Has making 400 videos and having it be your business, multiple businesses, I'm sure, has that affected your interest in rowing at all?
Yeah. I row maybe once a week, maybe twice a week. I love strength training, and so I spend a lot of my time with you guys may or may not be able to see the weights on the wall behind me.
I've seen them in your videos, yeah.
Yeah, so I just personally gain more value from that because I love it. And I've spent so much time on a rowing machine, and I guess I'm kind of at the razor's edge on a rowing machine, where I know how hard I can push and I know how hard I can make myself hurt. And so when I get onto the machine, there's a lot of that back stress of knowing what I'm capable of, knowing what I can do, what I should do, and not being able to just take it easy. And so it's not relaxing for me. Almost every time I sit in the machine, there's a level of stress involved. And so I do enjoy getting on it, but I much prefer to get on the water when I can, because that's lovely. Rowing on the water is a beautiful movement, and it strips a lot of the intensity out, and you're more so focused on just how your body moves, and you get to appreciate the water and the
air, you know, and everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know you've dabbled in it a little bit on your channel, but would you consider bringing in more of the cross training equipment and some of the strength training workouts that you do?
Yes. I went through Video Creators with Tim Schmoyer.
Oh yeah.
And that was a big discussion point as I was going through that, was how do you take a highly focused and niched down audience and start to introduce more broad concepts without losing the intent and the focus for which they came to your YouTube channel. And that has been something I think I've struggled with, because I would love to introduce new formats on the channel. Like I'm about to start launching where we have an online membership, and anybody can submit video to have our coaches review it. And so if you want your technique looked at and you want to know if you're doing it right, you can do that in our membership. And so I've asked people if they would like me to start reviewing it, and a bunch of people have said yes. So I'm going to start taking their videos and doing kind of breakdowns for the channel, just because I'm trying to find other ways, new format types, and bringing in the stuff that I'm passionate about would be really cool. I just don't know how the audience would receive it.
When you expand that, is there a little bit of fear that you're going to start to draw audiences? Fitness audiences can be real. Sometimes there's some bad apples in there that don't like watching people do things the wrong way, or they accuse you of doing it the wrong way and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I dealt with a healthy amount of that when I started the channel. You know, every rower wanted to have their say as to what my technique looked like and all of that. Thankfully, that doesn't happen anymore. And more so, what we found is, at least on the channel, it's been really important to me to bring the idiom of a dark horse to the forefront. And so that personality type is what is drawn to Dark Horse, the channel. And it becomes less about the rowing and more so about the who you are as a person. And that Dark Horse story is really important to me and to the business. It permeates through everything that we do. And so that inclusivity, that welcomeness to everyone, where we don't judge, we understand that everybody has a different starting point. That's always been a really important piece of it. So yeah, if you go broad fitness, then you start to get people who come in and just want to drop snide comments. And I don't need that.
There's a lot of players in that, isn't there? There's a lot of guys doing videos like that. Yeah.
Correct. I feel like it would call me to start doing more like shirtless videos. And I don't.
Yeah, you
that's not an area I've ever really wanted to be in. So
you got to show off those abs, right?
We were thinking about doing the podcast shirtless, but
yeah,
it's worth considering. It's worth considering. It's a unique pitch for sure.
But you know what I like? The kind of videos that you do are your motivational videos, not necessarily the ones where you're always on the rowing machine. You've had a few of those, and I think that they're expandable to all sorts of topics. You had one on kind of the importance of discomfort, that if you get comfortable rowing, or extrapolating that to basically anything, once you start finding yourself in a comfort zone, then you're probably not going to really make any true progress.
Yeah, and those ones are fun to make too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're really good. Is there anything that you find yourself getting into a comfort zone with your making videos?
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I was just talking about, is that like that content type right now. I'm struggling because I feel like I've just been in the same cycle on what we're putting out, the way we make our videos, the style of videos. We do one how-to and one workout video every week, so two videos a week. And it would be so nice to move outside of that. And I have struggled to challenge myself to do it, because I think I'm worried about the risk of seeing the subscriber rate drop or seeing the engagement rate drop, and that however much I don't want to live in the analytics, you kind of do. You show up on the dashboard and this video is 1 of 10, 5 of 10, 10 of 10. You're like, 10 of 10. Oh, like my day's ruined.
This is the end of the YouTube channel. Google, YouTube does an excellent job of letting you know when you've done a great job, and that feels really, really good when the paper airplane is flying and taking off. And then you
put a paper airplane that's on fire just doing this when you get a 10 out of 10.
And it's crashed to the ground and it's on fire and everything's just gray. Yeah.
What do you guys do when you experience that? Do we all just go through the same thing? We just don't talk about it?
Yes. And over, I think you're right. We all experience it. And I think for me, and it's only really been recently where I've kind of gotten to the point where I can't let decisions about, oh, I may lose subscribers or, oh, I may lose views. I can't let that drive decisions on my channel because those aren't really good indicators of how healthy your channel is or if you're even going in the right direction. If you're really approaching it from a business point of view, you'll take a little bit of that into consideration. But for the most part, as long as your channel is growing overall, and I think you start to see this over time, and you're at a channel now that you've been at this for 5+ years, you'll start to see overall your trend is up. So if it's like the stock market, you know, over time, it's going to go up. There's going to be
bumps.
We're
growing with inflation.
You just got to acknowledge that, there's going to be videos that people hate. There's going to be ones that I lose subscribers, but there's going to be other ones. But it's hard to kind of come to that realization,
And we have a balance, so therefore we try to do one video of what we want to do, one video of what people want to see, and then one video which is maybe an experiment or trying something new. And doing this for over 10 years, you kind of, you see the highs, you see the lows, and then you get comfortable with the lows. There's a lyric from De La Soul, which is, everyone cools off from being hot. It's about if you can handle being cold or not. And it just resonated with me that you just need to get good at seeing 10 out of 10 and just being like, I knew that. And that's totally fine. And you march on and you realize that nothing trends in that direction. Like, they're not intentionally driving your views down. Like, one bad video is not going to lead to the next video being bad. And there's a lot of people that are like, oh, it's about velocity. If you release a low view video, and then if you release a video which isn't going to get a bunch of views, it's not going to get a bunch of views. And if you follow that up with a video that you know is going to work or is going to get a bunch of views, more often than not, it does. And you just realize that it's like, okay, it's fine that they're not all zingers.
You're in a great position of being the rowing guy. I mean, you are the expert at it. You know, nobody's contending for that spot. So it's a pretty good position to be in.
And I think that too is probably number one, a good impetus to make change and to try new things, but also the thing that scares me. Because I am the rowing guy, I don't want to take a misstep because I am the rowing guy. That, like, it's a, you know, double-edged sword there.
Another video that I saw that was not rowing related but really resonated was you talked about overstimulation. And I just wanted to talk about that for a second because it seems like every single person I know, myself included, talks a lot about how it feels, especially coming out of lockdown where it seemed like the whole world kind of slowed down for a little bit and we kind of got a chance to be like, okay, now I can just stay at home and not worry about anything. And it's okay if I don't reply to an email or a text message. It's okay if I need time for myself and all of the rest. And now it feels like now that we're starting to get out of that, we're getting right back onto that train of like, oh, everything's getting busier and faster. And it feels like everything around us is picking up. So most people attribute that to just being social media. However, I love that it's much larger than that. It's overstimulation. And I would just like to hear you talk a little bit more about and how you deal with curbing that and keeping that in check.
We've evolved into this society that operates on a go, 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 go mentality. You can say that it's social media, but this has been happening ever since we started assembly lines, when you had times that you had to report and times that you had to check out. And as we've seen an increase just in information delivery, the speed of information, all these things have added to it. But at the same time, as we have grown into, you know, with the industrial age, and as we started losing connection to the wilderness, to the earth on the whole, we have become highly overstimulated, or if you want to put it into, you know, more technical terms, we're constantly firing our sympathetic nervous system, that setup that is intended for us to just go flinch, be reactive. And it's very hard to turn that off, because as a society, everything around us does that. Everything is constantly triggering, constantly firing. If you're not stressed, why aren't you stressed? You need to be. And it's very hard to break out of that. And I'm a huge advocate then in to go in the opposite direction, encourage downregulation, which is triggering your parasympathetic nervous system, the opposing nervous system, which is what helps you to recover, to heal, and to chill out. And downregulating your nervous system can be incredibly impactful to allowing you to step back from all of that stress, from that overstimulation, and connect with yourself, which is important because we often get so stimulated that we stop even listening to our own thoughts or listening to what our body's trying to tell us. Are we sick? Do we have headaches? Are we just generally anxious? We can often tap into why those things are happening if we can stay still long enough to hear it. And not many people understand how to do that because it's not widely taught. I would say yoga is probably doing a pretty decent job of helping to usher that in. But there's some really deep and impactful ways that you can find that through breath work or through cold water immersion or through, there are ways that we can create discomfort, but the discomfort is not pain. The discomfort is having to deal with ourselves. And that's something we're just not used to right now, dealing with ourselves. We're so good at the instant we start to feel something, the instant we start to interpret something, we just block it out with the next thing. Put the phone in front of our face, turn on something. And so personally, when I am trying to find my way out of overstimulation, for me, it's just finding quiet. Whether I can add in breath work, that's great. I love cold water. So I will take every opportunity. If I see a cold body of water, I will try to get into it, even if it's just briefly, cold showers, things like that. And I actually started a new membership this year. So this has been a way I've gotten out of my comfort zone. I started a new membership called The Method. And the sole intent behind that is to help people get uncomfortable, find downregulation moments. And so weekly, I actually teach a downreg where we're going through about a 45-minute guided stretch. And then I take a 15-minute meditation at the end. And so I'm trying in my own way to help to bring that forward.
It seems like we've entered this age of just like we're commoditizing this whole hashtag hustle every day, hustle mentality. You know, you see it on their Twitter profiles and it's like, what's your side hustle? And you've got to be working. You've got to be doing something 24/7 or somehow you're not valid. And what we're seeing is a lot of unhealthy people because they're not taking that time for themselves. And it can be a lot of different things like you're talking about. For me, it's literally going to the gym 6 days a week. And I'm one of those weird people that just absolutely loves working out because I know when I'm done with that workout, I'm going to feel sore, tired sometimes, but I'm going to feel better and mentally better too. Hey, what would you tell somebody who is kind of maybe thinking about getting back into shape? Why rowing?
Well, the why rowing piece, I always like to step back from that and say rowing can be an incredibly effective, enjoyable, useful exercise for you, but you have to enjoy it because if you don't enjoy it, you won't stick with it. So if you're trying to find movement for the first time again, you've been living a sedentary lifestyle and you want to try and get healthy again, give it a try. Find a way that you can get onto a rower, maybe at a gym or something like that. Watch some of my videos. See if it clicks for you. And if it does, then why rowing is because it gives you longevity of movement. Many, you know, the stories of 100-year-olds still rowing. And, you know, I just emceed the World Championships. We had a category that was men's 90+. And there were 94-year-olds competing at the 2,000-meter distance. So it truly is useful at any age range, and because it works as hard as you want it to. So you can make it like it'll never back down. So no matter how strong you get or wherever you're starting, it will give you the resistance that you're looking for, and you can ramp that up or ramp it down as you need with one machine. So that's kind of the why piece.
One of the things you mentioned, which I thought was really good advice, is people might say, I want to start rowing to lose weight. And you kind of framed that in a different question of, okay, you want to lose weight, but why? You want to lose weight because, and then finish that sentence. So your real goal is a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the so that drill down. What do you want to accomplish? Well, I want to lose weight. So that ... What? So that what? Why do you want to lose weight? Well, so that I can get on the ground and play with my kids. Okay, great. So that ... What? You know, what do you want from being able to get on the ground and play with your kids? Well, I want my kids to see a healthy lifestyle and grow up knowing that movement is appropriate no matter what age you are. Okay, let's try it again. So, and you just keep drilling down until you get to that core fundamental reason that we never take the moment to truly expose, because that is a much heavier driver to let go of than I want to lose weight. I want to lose weight. You try the thing, you don't lose weight. You're like, okay, I guess I'll stop or I'll move on to something else. But if your ultimate, if the core reason you're doing something like this is because you have a familial past of complete sedentary lifestyle, you have family members who have died from diabetes, and you don't know how to eat healthy, and you are starting a young family of your own, and you want to be the one that breaks the cycle, that is far more empowering to continue on when things get hard, when things get challenging, than to just let go of losing weight. Because it's not about losing weight. You may lose weight, you probably will, by changing your nutrition or starting to move. But having a deeper meaning will sustain you for far longer.
Tell us a little bit about your courses. You have a lot of content on those courses.
Yeah, we do. We have one core product, and it's called The Crew. It's a monthly membership. It's $19 a month, and it is intended to over-deliver on value for $19 a month. That's always been important
to me. Great deal.
Yeah, we have... And in there, I mean, training programs for any distance you could ever want. So if you want to get better at a 500, 1,000, 5K, 2K, 10K, marathon, however, whatever you want to do on the rowing machine, we will have a training program in there that's part of the library. And then we have the ability, we have a private community. And so in that community, as I mentioned earlier, you can get coaching for $19 a month. You can drop a video and a coach will review it and give you feedback on it, which, I mean, that's unheard of. And yeah, we really try to give as much value as we can. And the same goes for the YouTube channel. You know, I've always said, like, you don't pay for my knowledge. I'll give you everything for free. If you want to watch all of our YouTube videos, you'll learn everything that I have to teach. If you want organization, then come join us in our membership programs. And so we have The Crew, we have professional courses, as I mentioned. So we took that seminar online. I've kind of sidelined that for a couple of years. I was doing the open close cart thing and I just got burned out doing it up by myself. It was just so much copywriting, so many emails to put together. So much was weighing on that 1 week window of open. And so I just turned it evergreen and that, so it's there. I just don't really promote it. We have plans probably in this year to revamp that and rework the structure.
How many people are on the Dark Horse team? It sounds like you have coaches who work with you, and then you've probably got your media team. I know you mentioned you have an editor. Who all else do you got working with you?
Right now we're a team of six. I have an editor, a social person who just handles crafting posts and whatnot, mostly for Instagram, Facebook. She doesn't touch the YouTube side. Mm-hmm. I have a support person. She's amazing. She's been with us for a long time now. Two coaches. I think that's it. There's six of us. And I'm looking to hire an ops person right now. That's kind of a critical hire that I'm trying to make because I know that I'm the bottleneck for most projects internally. I've created this really terrible hub and spoke model of a business where everybody has to report to me.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Yeah.
But that's how you keep ultimate control.
You know, it's like, you know, you don't want it, but you do it anyways.
You do.
It's hard to let go of the reins sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I desperately want to, though. So I have a video filmed and a landing page up that will be the application page. I just need to go live with it. I'm hoping I can hire internally within our audience, because that would be pretty cool to be able to find somebody who already understands what we do and how we do it. And so we'll see how that goes. But that's the team right now. I think we're six, if my math is correct.
You mentioned earlier that you do the titles. Do you also do the thumbnails?
My editor and I work together on them. So I'll look at what I want it to be. I'll do the thing where I'll take maybe 30 photos in a day of me doing the like, you know, like so that he can cut them out. And so and so he has a library of those, and I'll kind of say, you know, hey, give me a surprised face. I want a rower down in the lower right. Here's the text that I'm looking for. Put it together, see what you come up with. And usually by the second try, we've got it between the two of us. He knows me pretty well at this point. He's in the Philippines, and so is my support person. My two coaches are in Europe. So we're a pretty global team.
And how long does it take you to make a title? How long does it take you to finally decide on a title is what I'm trying to, was it what I'm trying to get at? Because it takes me about 2.5 hours. Like I'll put a title and then I'll keep reading it and I'll change it and I'll keep reading it, putting keywords earlier in the title, deciding
it's
when to
funny
cap,
that you
no cap.
Say that. Like last week was the first time that I sat down and went, okay, I'm going to start taking my titles more serious than I do now. I took them serious, but not 2.5 hours serious. And now I think I want to start spending the 2.5 hours serious on my thumb and my title together and really give them a lot of polishing. And so the videos that we, starting yesterday, the videos that we have coming out will all kind of see that. So I'm actually testing it right now. And yesterday's video went 2 of 10. So, you know, hey, who knows
there
why.
There you go.
But maybe that was thumb, maybe that was title. I don't know.
The paper plane is yeah. flying through the air. Flying these.
Yeah, 18% higher than your average. Yeah.
It's crazy how I don't think a lot of people understand how much work goes into just the title of a video sometimes, you know? Just switching words around, trying to make it clear, trying to make it something that people are going to be intrigued by, and then have it support the thumbnail and vice versa. It's a real art.
And I mean, we spend 30 hours making a video or even more sometimes, and then it all comes down to whether or not the title and the thumbnail are going to get you the views on the video to begin with.
Yeah,
so yeah, where are you spending your time is the question.
Yeah, that's, I mean, your guys' process, I mean, 30 hours on a video for me, I'm like, can I get this out in 45 minutes? I think so. Okay, let's do it.
Okay. We do not, yeah, we here at Clean My Space do not take 30. I was just a number off the top of my head, just to clarify.
But. I've been doing short videos, like bang those things out in 2 minutes.
How have those been performing for you? Have you been doing that as shorts?
The shorts, yeah. At first, it takes a while for them to kind of take hold, but if you're kind of persistent with them, they do really well. Certain ones do really well. You know, I have one that went over 1 million views. It's kind of crazy. And it just kind of depends upon how much engagement they receive. And if YouTube blesses you with the shelf, they have this short shelf and your videos don't always get on that. But if they get on that, then they go, you have to make them for non-subscribers. They're strictly for non-subscribers. So It's just an interesting way for me to look at making videos. It's something new, kind of exciting, and see how it goes.
I've been trying to scratch a similar itch, but I haven't been doing it on YouTube. I have typically never done anything on Instagram and Facebook. Yeah. They just don't interest me. But I have been having fun playing with Reels on Instagram lately.
Yeah.
Because it's so short format, right, and I can do them so quick. It's a way for me to almost test out my personality and how my video comes across and what our audience is liking. And it's been the same on Reels for us. You know, we've had videos get more views than we have subscribers. I'm like, okay, great. I guess that's working. So I might have to try and find a way to usher that onto the YouTube channel.
They're really pushing the shorts to non-subscribers. The whole thought is to like really, really generate a new interest from a fresh audience with this. So we're using them, or we're going to start using them, or plan to use them, is for all the stuff that didn't quite meet the mark of making it to a full-blown video. Because in the cleaning space, I could probably make a video about how to clean AirPods, but you know, maybe cleaning your eyeglasses is a little too specific. So it's nice to have like this minute long video that you can just kind of put out there, and it gets the same reach and the same, you know, potential amount of views, which is really cool.
Yeah. Chad and I were having this discussion the other day, and what's intriguing about these, and I think why it's probably a good idea to start doing them now, is because they're already doubling in the amount of people who are watching shorts. And since it's Google, they're going to work this into their search algorithm. Right now, they're not really searchable very well. But you know how when you search on Google and you get those snippets, and sometimes they'll have just a little bit of a bigger video. Well, now, if you can answer a question and have it in under a minute, you're going to be on those top search. And if you already have this kind of library that you're building up, then you're going to be golden once that starts to be the case. So it's really what I'm trying to do now is thinking about what would be questions that people might actually be Googling that I could provide the answer for in under a minute. So at least that's kind of my strategy.
That's a great way of thinking about that.
Right.
That you use it as that short to hook the subscriber to what's the first question you would ask to even make your way into my space.
Yeah.
That I could show you a quick answer, show you who I am and what I do. And
yeah, it's all about discovery, getting people to discover it, because it's definitely not for subscribers. Subscribers really aren't that interested in it.
And that's an opportunity even to do something which gets exposure off YouTube. Our biggest videos end up doing well in traditional Google now that they prioritize video at the top of the search engine result pages. So our biggest end up getting crazy traction, millions of views, but very few, like low engagement, low comments, because they're people who are just watching on their phone. How do I make my bed? Or how do I clean my mattress? Not even going to the YouTube app, just the Google search, you know, page comes up, and then they just tap watch it in the Google search page and then move on their way. So,
Chad, there's something so visceral about you demonstrating the way that somebody is searching that helps you to really like internalize the real user. Because you're like, that is exactly what they're doing. How do I make my bed? How do I make my bed?
That's it. Because I started realizing that we think of it as a YouTuber. You think about going to YouTube and typing in a question, and like, what would someone type in if they wanted to change a flat tire? Well, they would go to YouTube. No, they wouldn't. They would actually just grab their phone and be like, how do I change a tire? And then literally whatever video Google serves up first is the thing that will get their attention. So it does. It takes it out of like trying to think of something working in the YouTube view, like the lean back, just watching content and I'm looking for this, versus like even before that, you're literally solving people's problems as opposed to just making an interesting video, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's such a great way of thinking about it.
I think that's what's going to separate that from TikTok videos, really, is that searchability. And it's true. We usually use Google for search. I do it. I mean, that's how I get to Wikipedia. I do a Google search. It's like, oh, I guess I could have just gone to Wikipedia to begin with. But no, it's always going to be Google.
Yeah. Well, you guys are inspiring me to now re-look at shorts here.
Google's really behind it. They're really, really promoting the creators who are taking the time to experiment with shorts right now. And the main reason why we know about it is because our YouTube partner manager kept hounding us. It's like, do shorts. We're really behind shorts right now. We're really promoting shorts right now. So food for thought. What's next for Dark Horse Rowing?
So I hit a little slump with like seeing a lot of 10s out of 10s, you know, a few weeks in a row. And I was like,
can't let those get you down.
No, but last week I just kind of felt this renewed energy. I don't know if the weather changed here in San Diego and it helped things. And I kind of stopped making videos on the same cycle that I was, which every Friday I had cleared. I would just show up. I'd try and get out as many videos as I could. I spent last Friday really trying to be creative about what's about my process. And that's where the really messing with my titles and my thumbnails came in. It was kind of fun for me to dig in and do that work. And so what's next for us? We're definitely working on expanding the business right now, because our membership has just exploded over the last year. I mean, I think we've seen 1,000% growth.
Wow.
Over the last year in our membership.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I can't claim that we did anything special. We just happened to have set ourselves up to be in the right place to be able to help people during that time. So it's trying to expand on that. I just promoted one of my coaches to director of coaching, and so I'm trying to grow the team a little bit. I don't want to become a monolith, but I do want to become a much more effective team, and that's where that ops role really comes in. And I'd like to free myself up to be doing more content creation and then to be able to dig myself into some other businesses to try and scratch some itches that I have there. Steve, I have to give you a shout out. I took Weekend Woodworker way back when.
Oh, really?
I've been following you forever. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Right behind the camera right now, I have my entire wall of tools. And
awesome.
the slatted bench is still in our entryway in the house.
Great.
So, you know, I'm trying to find ways of engaging in what I love. We have a half acre here in San Diego, and I love permaculture principles and getting my hands dirty and planting, and we have chickens. And so I'd like to be able to spend more time on the family and with my family. I have a 3-month-old now, so I have 2 kids, and making sure that I am connecting with the real world, and also growing the business in a sustainable and impactful way to help people and create just a great lifestyle for everybody who is on my back end, so that actually works for Dark Horse. I want to make sure that everybody there is happy to be working for us and having a great time, and that we get to see this thing just continue to explode. I mean, I'm sure we won't keep the same amount of growth, but to be able to continue to grow would be great.
Well, your videos have inspired me, and I tell you what, I'm going to the gym here in about 30 minutes, and I'm going to pull out that rowing machine at the end of my workout and revisit.
Pull up one of our follow along workouts.
I'm going to do that. Hey, Shane, it's been a pleasure having you on our podcast and giving us some insight into the world of rowing. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
For everybody listening to this, if you are jazzed up about rowing and think it sounds fun, or if you're ready to make a change in your life and get healthy, please check out Shane's YouTube channel, Dark Horse Rowing, and his website at darkhorserowing.com, and sign up for one of his courses. And also, if you enjoy Chad and Steve Have a Podcast, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating over on Apple Podcasts, or better yet, leave us a glowing review. We'd sure appreciate your help in getting our show discovered. Thanks for listening, everybody.